their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker. Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Welcome back, Rick.
Thanks.
And welcome back to all our listeners, both of them.
you know who you are.
Yeah, you know who you are. We appreciate you listening and finding us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you might get your podcast from. We really do appreciate it. What is our topic for today?
Well, this is, it looks like it's the Alfred E. Newman episode, the What Me Worry.
Yes. In other words, it's things that we tend to obsess about a little bit too much and maybe we shouldn't obsess about.
And we'll happily include ourselves in that too.
Exactly.
We'll fess up.
Present company included. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's just so much, you know, the internet is a wonderful place, but it's got so much, I wouldn't call it misinformation, but things kind of sometimes get amplified.
Yeah.
And things that you should really be worried about. People will often make a really big deal about something that really isn't a big deal.
Right.
And you can spend a lot of time sort of hand-wringing about stuff. Now, we still do that. Usually for me, it comes down to what do I bring for a trip? That's where we end up spending a lot of time going in circles. But,
yep.
You know, there's a bunch of different things out there with respect to camera settings, gear, whatnot. So we wanted to go through some of these and maybe, you know, put everyone a little bit more at ease with stuff that you may or may not be worrying about. And if you weren't worrying about these things in the beginning, don't worry about them now. And I was like, we don't want to create a monster. Exactly. So let's see what we got going on there.
Yep.
Oh, okay. So we have a list of stuff. And the first one on our list is resolution.
Yes.
My favorite topic.
Yeah.
How many megapixels is enough?
It should always be more, right?
Right.
Than you have. But, you know, Jason and I were talking earlier, and I was mentioning I was helping my son with a move a few days ago, and he had some poster-sized prints that he had made from a trip to South America where he was backpacking around. And so these, you know, like 24 by 36 inches or about an A1 metric paper size, you know, so pretty big, you know, honestly, probably bigger than most people print. But made with a D200, 10 megapixels, with an 18-200 wide-ranging zoom, which was never considered, you know, a paragon of sharpness or whatever, they looked fabulous. Oh, my God.
Right.
They were incredible.
You know, it reminds me of a long time ago.
Galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed Dave Black once,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me about when he started with digital, he was a very early adopter. He was shooting a Nikon D1,
mm-hmm.
I think it was a D1H or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but nobody wanted digital submissions back then, mostly because they didn't know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things was, oh, well, you know, it's not enough pixels. And he would just get them converted. He would get them scanned into slides, and then he could hand in slide film, and they loved them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they thought they were just outstanding. So, you know, there is something to be said about having more megapixels, right? I mean, it allows you degrees of freedom that you didn't have. Mm-hmm. But in terms of overall image quality, pixel quality is more important than just how many pixels that you have. Because resolution as just a number is kind of out of context by itself.
Yeah.
I mean, my iPhone has, 12 megapixels, right? But
mm-hmm.
the images don't look the same when I zoom in on them as
right.
they do coming out of
they get a little bit ratty.
A different camera. So, you know, I remember also early on in digital, so 2004, 2005, I remember Arizona Highways Magazine, which is a great
mm-hmm.
photo magazine. They wouldn't accept submissions for any digital camera unless it was at least 12 megapixel. Which was their way of saying, we don't want digital submissions
mm-hmm.
because nobody had a 12 megapixel camera at that time. very few. So no, I'm with you. I mean, a well executed image, if you don't have to resize it, you know, or crop terribly much so that you're seeing pixels, can be shot at, you know.
I think another important thing, you know, just to remind everyone of is if you want to double the horizontal or vertical resolution of an image, you know, go from, let's say, 3,000 pixels on a side to 6,000, you have to quadruple the megapixel count of your sensor. So you'd have to go from 10 to 40 to get a doubling.
Right.
Of the linear resolution. You know, so smaller.
Because it's an area, not a. Yeah. It's so, a square function.
So, you know, going from 16 to 24 or 24 to 36 is really not that huge of a step. Your images are not going to look dramatically different. They're just not. So it's just something to keep in mind. But seeing those big poster size prints that looked fabulous from a 10 megapixel camera was just a good reminder. Yeah, and in that case, absolutely. I think, you know, a little bit of care in taking the images and then how he worked with them in post-processing mattered a whole lot more.
So kind of part and parcel with the resolution thing is sensor size. It's mm-hmm. a different thing, but, you know, it used to be, oh, well, you need a full frame camera. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know.
And we like them.
And sensor size has some impacts, like going back to the, we're talking about not the resolution, but the pixel density. Mm-hmm. So really tiny sensors, like the ones that are in point-and-shoot cameras or in your phone, will not produce the same quality of image. And they also have effects on things like depth of field and, you know, perceived, shallow depth of field. You get mm-hmm. it, you know. But the bottom line is that, you know, we've used cameras of different sensor sizes. And while there were differences in quality, and there still are. I mean, I know you've used Micro Four Thirds.
Yeah.
I've used.
I still do.
Yeah. And we both have APS-C cameras.
Right.
And we both have 35 millimeter. And you've used some medium format stuff.
I might have medium format stuff.
Yeah. It's quite possible. I've used the Nikon CX mm-hmm. format. All of these produce excellent images when used properly. And mm-hmm. and today, the differences between them are less noticeable than they used to be.
Yeah. But you can make big prints out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That can look good.
Okay.
It's a topic we'll talk more about with the sensor sizes.
Sure. Yeah. That sounds like a good topic.
So that people can worry more about it.
Ooh, yes. Let me worry. Okay. Well, what else do we have on our list? Oh, yes. Noise and ISO.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we are living in good times, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
This used to be an issue. I mean, it was a valid concern.
Mm-hmm. Even then, though, it was a bit overblown, though, too.
Right. And it sort of stemmed from the advice at the time. And I still get the occasional, you know, run into someone who was told, I was told never to set my camera above the base ISO, you know, why? Well, because you get noise. Well, okay. First of all, pretty much all of the digital cameras right now, the technology is excellent. And noise doesn't become a real problem unless you're really up there on your ISOs or if you're really trying to pull out shadow detail, you know, mm-hmm. from an underexposed image, let's say. So the noise just isn't there.
I think an important thing, too, is realistically, what are you going to do with your images? How are you going to display them, look at them? I think the wrong answer is always zooming into 100% on your right. computer monitor. That's, you know, everyone does it, but that's not displaying an image. So, you know, you need to think about what print sizes you're actually going to make, not which ones you'd theoretically like to make one time. And if you're doing what a lot of people do these days, which is this just simply showing them online as smaller JPEGs, heck, the noise is just not even going to show up most likely.
Exactly. Even at crazy ISOs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to go with this, there was people would worry about, should I ever use auto ISO? Yes, use it. It's super, super good for when you're shooting handheld to prevent camera shake. Mm-hmm. And darn near every camera can probably get you to 3200 ISO
easily,
you know, yeah, with minimal noise concerns. So, you know, better to have a sharp shot with some noise than a blurry shot that is, you know, grain free.
Right.
So don't worry about it. I mean, it's there, but it's not something that has to be.
It typically disappears in a print.
Exactly.
To a large extent, unless it's really, really noisy. And it also disappears in a JPEG that's sized for the internet. It just goes away.
It sure does. Okay, so then we have here's a great one. Let's talk about what you should use for your raw file saving. Should you use compressed raw or lossless compressed raw or uncompressed raw? Because people sometimes worry about this.
Yeah.
And many cameras will have two different. They will offer an uncompressed setting and then some kind of a compressed setting.
Maybe even two of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And really the question comes down to, file storage size on your memory cards and your computer. An uncompressed RAW file will be larger and slower to, you know, take more time to write, take more time to transfer to your computer. But if your camera offers something called lossless compression, that's a great setting to use, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it takes up less space and you are losing no information. That's why it's lossless.
Right.
No information is lost.
Now let's contrast with a JPEG, which would be a lossy form, mm-hmm, of compression.
The only issue I've seen with lossless compressed RAW files compared to uncompressed is sometimes, I'll just say certain software companies who make RAW converters are notoriously a little bit slow about dealing with compression. And so you might have to shoot uncompressed initially, wait a few months for them to get full support for your camera out. After that, it's all clear sailing. Other companies have it always instantly, and it's not a problem. That's the only thing I've ever seen is an issue with lossless compressed.
So there is one instance where you might want to think about your RAW compression, and that's if your camera doesn't offer something that's specifically called out as lossless.
Right.
You know, Nikon cameras have both options, a traditional compressed RAW and an uncompressed. And then there's some Nikon cameras that will shoot a compressed RAW and not even offer you uncompressed as an option, mm-hmm, I believe, some of the lower-end cameras. Yeah. But if when you read in your manual that the compression algorithm is not lossless, you may wish to shoot uncompressed.
Yeah, and sometimes a clue to what it is can be the use of terms like visually lossless. That means lossy. It just means,
right,
it's not that big a deal. Just like JPEGs aren't that big a deal if you're not editing them a whole heck of a lot.
And frankly, we went through this back in the day because prior to the D3, I believe, Nikon didn't offer a lossless compression option.
Right.
And there was this huge discussion as to should you shoot compressed. And the answer was you really never noticed it except,
right,
for... it would have to be an extreme adjustment in the highlights,
yeah,
to even notice
and
anything.
So when that was going on, I think this is true for you too, I shot with the lossy compression and I
absolutely
was fine.
Because especially with the cost of memory cards back then.
Yeah.
So that was a nice little trip down memory lane. And then the last thing we want to spend some time on today is gear obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to you get something new or you're thinking about buying something. Oftentimes it's a lens, but it can be a new camera. With a camera, for example, that first question that comes out is, well, how does it do with high ISO? Immediately you're worrying about that noise again. So going back to that, and the answer is, yeah, sure. Go take a look, see what your camera does. see what ISO the noise is tolerable, understanding that you can clean it up, know what your camera does, and then stop worrying about it, you know?
Right.
I mean, I know that I can shoot, in some cases, you know, up to 8,000 or even higher with these cameras and really not have a problem with noise. I might have some reduced color saturation, but mostly they work great.
Mm-hmm.
So other than my initial round to see for myself, I don't really worry about it too much. But lenses are huge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people just hammering over lenses.
And a sharp lens is a nice thing. You know, it's one of those elements that goes into quality. I'm not going to deny that. The thing I think gets a bit out of control, though, is worrying about edge sharpness with a lens that's wide open to 1.4. It's a scenario that is you're just unlikely to ever encounter in real world use. You're going to stop down. You're going to put it on a tripod. You'll take the ISO up like you were talking about earlier. No big deal. Worrying about edge sharpness at 1.4 or 1.8 or whatever, and I see it, is just misplaced anxiety.
Right. Another thing, too, to consider, and while, I mean, it is true, a well-corrected optical formula is a wonderful thing, but it's also true that we live in a world where a lot of correction can be done in software post-processing. So things that were somewhat problematic before, like distortion or vignetting, these were big deals with film. But with digital, you're gonna be able to correct that. In a lot of cases, it's automatic.
Yeah, and people worry, this is a thing that they worry too much about too, it's reduction in resolution toward the edges because of those software corrections. Realistically, even big prints, it's not going to show up. It's just not that big a thing.
Absolutely. The only time I ever really see weird stuff is if I defished a fisheye lens.
Yeah, image. That's, you know, pretty extreme.
But that's extreme. Yeah, very extreme. There's a thing, you know, good lenses are good for a reason, but usually that reason has to do with their aperture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you have a choice between buying, you know, an f4 lens and an f2.8 lens, well, they both could be equally sharp. What you're paying for is the aperture. Maybe some are better corrected than others. But even what we would consider the consumer-grade lenses are quite good. What I see a lot, and this is, you know, my biggest pet peeve on internet forums, is someone will ask the question is, what's the sharpest lens for this camera? Or even worse, they might say, what's the best lens for this camera? Mm-hmm. Meaning something like optically.
And they're talking from a context of having no lenses yet, and they just want to buy the lens that's sharpest no matter what its focal length or aperture is. And
there was a time when there was that Coastal Optics, whatever mm-hmm. it was, lens, which is a great lens from what I've heard. But mm-hmm. you know, keep in mind that the best lens for your camera isn't always the one that is optimized optically. Sometimes you have to think about the kind of subjects you shoot. The best lens will be the one that gives you the range of focal lengths or the focal length that is appropriate for that subject.
And that you'll actually want to shoot with.
Yeah. I mean, if the thing weighs 5 pounds, who cares?
Right, right, right.
Another thing, too, I mean, if you're shooting landscapes, then you don't need an f1.4 lens or even an f2.8 lens.
Right.
It's a different kind of style. So, and of course, you know, this will be another subject, but you can't go into this in a vacuum and not look at the price of and the cost of the lenses. So sometimes the best lens is literally one that meets your budget and suits your needs. And maybe someday you'll, you know, get another one. Other features of lenses sometimes trump the pure optical performance. So, you know, one great example is the wide angles. You know, we both have, or have had in the past, the wonderful 14-24 2.8 Nikkor zoom. Mm-hmm. It's a great lens.
But it's big.
But it's big. It's big. It's bulbous. It doesn't take filters other than through a real kludge system. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it wasn't what would go in my bag when I was shooting landscapes. Mm-hmm. It's great for interiors, great for night photography because it's 2.8. But that 16 to 35 went into my bag an awful lot more.
And sometimes I shot with the 18 to 35 because it was even smaller.
I've done that too.
Yeah.
So,
you know, that little 14 to 30 that we're shooting a lot with now, just wonderful. Wide right. range, takes filters, it's sharp, and it weighs almost nothing.
It really does. And, you know, there's been some random criticism of that lens. I don't know where it comes from because a lot of it gets corrected in post. You know, it's automatic things. Hey, guess what? If it's corrected, I don't really care. That's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I looked at that lens. It's sharp in the corners. Maybe there are scenarios where you turn off the corrections and... Well, and it doesn't look as good, but I don't. Yeah. So at least for me, I mean, because looking at my images from the Badlands from a couple of weeks ago, with that lens, they're just tack sharp
yeah.
in the corners.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy with that. Another lens thing that people worry about is bokeh.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that in the past, long, long time ago, I had some lenses that had really, really nasty bokeh. I had a Tamron 90mm 2.5 macro. I think probably the very first one, which was purely mechanical, no autofocus. It was extremely sharp, but you got a nasty double line effect, especially at moderate distances, and it was distracting. So that wasn't good. It was distracting enough that I didn't like using the lens, you know, in anything other than a pure macro situation. But that's a rarity. You know, most of the cases, it's fine. And you can go too far. It starts into something that starts resembling a wine tasting context where people talk about, oh, the character and, you know, all this kind of stuff. and it's not going to matter to the vast majority of people looking at your images.
Really doesn't. And, you know, it's true. There are some lenses that produce wonderful bokeh, mm-hmm. better than others. But yeah, I'm with you, as very few produce truly bad.
Right. And sometimes the bad is embraced as a positive quality, like the swirly bokeh that you can get with some lens designs. You know, they're typically fairly cheap lenses. But, you know, as a special effect, that can work. So even the nasty stuff can be okay.
In fairness, I'm not a huge fan of the donut bokeh from reflex lenses, but nobody really shoots with those anymore.
Those have kind of disappeared.
Exactly. So those are gone. But, you know, there's...
And please don't take pictures of fire hydrants and things like that to show off bokeh. Just,
you know, don't. So here's what I do when I get a new lens. I test it. Mm-hmm. I make sure that it's uniformly sharp across the frame, or that if there's a little softening in the corners, that it's uniform in all of them, not something weird and decentered. Mm-hmm. And then I stop worrying.
Yeah, me too. My standard test is I go out, shoot the house across the street at differing apertures. And like you said, I just make sure that it looks about the same on both sides. And you can always turn the camera upside down if you choose to make it easier to compare. I have seen a few lenses mm-hmm. that had to go back because of decentering. So it's not a bad idea to do that, but you don't need to spend a lot of time on it. You don't have to shoot test targets, all that kind of stuff. It can be a whole lot simpler.
And if you're not seeing it obviously,
you're not going to see it.
Then it's not a problem, right? Like something that's truly decentered, you would notice it in your images right away.
Yeah.
It's not one of these, oh, I need to pixel peep down to that, you know, micro level.
No, it'll show up.
So anyway, these are all the things. Hopefully we are not encouraging anyone to worry about these topics. They're all valid things, but they're, I think in the context of where we are with photography today, these are things that just aren't that big of a deal. Like they could have been back in the film days or even the early digital days. So,
Yeah, just said a different way, and we'll talk about this more in a future episode on, you know, how to save money on equipment. But the least expensive, we'll just talk about DSLRs that are APS-C sized, that come with kit lenses. Those will produce fabulous images. You're just going to be a little bit more limited on controls and some other things, but they'll produce fabulous images.
They sure will. Yeah, no complaints. All right, so we remind you to don't worry, be happy, and
go make photographs.
Check out our Facebook page where you can submit your questions to be read on the air at facebook.com/imagedoctors. You can also see all the episodes and the archives at my website, luminescentphoto.com. If you got a question for us, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, happy shooting.
Bye-bye.